You're listening to Building the Game with Rob and Jason.
It's Building the Game with Jason and Rob. For tabletop game design, you really can't go wrong. Building the game, yeah, building the game.
We are recording!
Hello. Yay!
Yeah, whoa. Hello and welcome to Building the Game, a documentary podcast. Today is Monday, June 27th, 2016. You're listening to episode 113.
Or 213.
We went back in time, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, boy.
Back in time.
Yep.
So we're still driving home from Origins. I know it's like been a week, but we're still driving home from Origins.
That's a long trip.
Whoa.
By the way, now what's stuck in my head is going to be back in time. The Huey Lewis song, so yeah.
Get back in time.
Listen, if you're out there and you don't like Huey Lewis, you stop listening to this show right now.
Or if you like Huey Lewis and you don't know that SNL sketch, go look that up, because that's great. You know that SNL sketch?
No.
Oh, you should look that up, because it's great.
I've got to do that.
Yeah.
Because I do love me some Huey Lewis.
Yeah.
Saw him in concert once. They're actually coming to Firekeeper's Casino.
Oh, for real?
But it's like $100 a ticket.
Oh, that's too bad.
I know. It was like, if it had been like half that, I'd have been like, I was going to surprise my wife. But I'm like, yeah. I'm not going to pay $200 to see Huey Lewis in the news. I mean, I would love to, but I just felt wrong doing that.
Yeah, Huey Lewis, man. Boy, that was hit 4. That album 4 is freaking excellent. It's a great album.
Yep.
It's a great album.
It is.
And it's like, and he's a, Huey Lewis then is immortalized through things like Back in the Future, right?
Yep.
So no one will ever forget Huey Lewis because of that.
Right.
And then, have you ever seen American Psycho?
Yes.
Okay, that scene in American Psycho where he talks about Huey Lewis.
Yes.
Is...
while committing an axe murder.
Oh my, God.
It's so good.
It's so good.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Huey Lewis has made his mark on popular culture in many ways.
And actually, a movie that was surprisingly spectacular was Duets.
Oh, I
where
heard
Huey
good.
Lewis and Gwyneth Paltrow were, I think, a father and daughter traveling the country doing karaoke.
Nice.
And it's so good. Like,
okay.
I didn't expect it to be good, but it was really good. And Huey Lewis is actually great.
You know, he also did the theme song for Pineapple Express. Did you know that?
I didn't know that.
Did you ever see that?
No.
Pretty good. Pretty funny.
Oh, all right.
Yeah, pretty funny.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, Huey Lewis. Good times, guys.
Yeah.
If you hated Huey Lewis, sorry about this segment, but...
Love the Lou.
We do.
We love the Lou.
So.
So still driving home from Origins. We spent way too much time talking about Origins. Well, I mean, that was the whole point of the last episode.
It's like over an hour episode talking about Origins.
Yeah,
so.
We had a good time. We're still kind of glowing from it.
Yeah.
As we record this.
Right.
But that's not what we're here to talk about today.
No, today we're going to talk about other stuff.
Other stuff.
Like things, but we shouldn't get into our topic quite yet, because like we just started the episode.
Right, that's we banter.
I think we need like 10 more minutes of Huey Lewis talk. And then, what else has been going on of late?
New Game of Thrones tonight. Second to last episode of the season.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So,
Builders,
if you're fans, you've probably already seen it. We haven't seen it yet. We're excited about that.
Wait, what do you mean we haven't seen it yet?
Well, you and I haven't seen it yet because it's airing tonight.
Yeah, well, I'm just saying, though. By the time it's recorded, I saw it.
You
I saw it the
have.
Night it aired. Because I don't let Game of Thrones go. Do you
sure.
watch it on the night of time?
Oh, yeah, of course.
Because you can start watching it the same time I can with HBO Now, right?
Yeah, HBO Go, yeah.
Oh, you have Go, because, well...
We're borrowing
you borrow
HBO
that
go.
From someone else.
Right.
Hopefully no one from...
Take exit 31A to merge onto I-69 North toward Lansing, Michigan.
Thank you.
Oh, Suri's still talking through us. Suri, special guest on this episode again. Exit 31A, Rob, is what you want.
Yeah, 2 miles. I'll go ahead and get over. We haven't seen it yet. I guess this episode's called Battle of the Bastards.
Yes, and it's a highly anticipated episode. One of their biggest productions ever.
Yeah.
They said somebody estimated that the budget for this episode may have been upwards of $24 million.
It's feature film, small feature film.
Yeah.
Level
well, they
there.
Said the average budget of Game of Thrones episode is about $10 million.
Okay.
So, and they because of all the extra stuff, like, So I do not think it's going to disappoint. Do you have any predictions you want to share for this episode?
I don't want to get into predictions because in case there's anybody who's listening who might be a few seasons behind, you know, I don't want to say anything that might be obvious and not a spoiler to us, but could spoil something for them. So I don't like to do that. If I were in their position, I'd be upset.
Right. That's fair.
Yeah.
That's fair. That's very nice.
But anyway, looking forward to it.
Yeah. I worry about the fate of some characters that I like.
Sure.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that's pretty much every episode of Game of Thrones, to be fair, so.
I'm also worried about the fate of some characters that I don't like.
Yes. That is also a thing to be worried about.
Right.
So, yeah. So that's exciting, though, that's going to be, that's going to be airing tonight in the next week's season finale, which is an extended season finale, which is awesome.
Good.
Now we're going to take exit 31A. It's good stuff.
North toward Lansing, Michigan.
North towards Lansing, Michigan.
Okay.
So, yeah, it's exciting because we want to go home.
We do. So Game of Thrones has happened. We did see an awesome t-shirt at Origins this year.
Yes,
I'm surprised
did.
You didn't buy it.
I really wanted to buy it. I may still buy it. Here's my fear is that I bought it, and then I went and saw him, and then he was like, what is that?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was a shirt with a caricature of Bruno Cathala on it, and it said, Cathala is my homeboy.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
And, yeah, I really, really wanted that shirt.
You can turn her off now, I think, if you want.
All right, so, sorry, guys, say bye to Siri.
Bye, Siri. So that's a pretty cool t-shirt. We mentioned going to Dirty Frank's on the last episode and having delicious, horrible hot dogs. I really wanted to buy a Dirty Frank's t-shirt.
But they did not have any.
They did not have any. But that's okay. I don't need another t-shirt. Anyway, what else is going on?
Well, so after Origins, I've got some games I want to tweak, some stuff I want to work on.
Yeah.
I also want to find a new game to work on. I need a new game now that you know, I'm pretty happy with where my minecart's at, and it's being reviewed by the publisher. I want to make some tweaks to that, but I need something else to occupy my time, so I need to find another decent-sized game that I can work on, you know?
Yeah, that's a good point. Because I'm kind of feeling that way, too, so I have a couple of tweaks to make to Treasure Trouble, and then I'm going to finish the art for Gamecrafter and throw it up there and make it available. So I'll probably do that in the next couple of weeks. I'm not in a great hurry. Hopefully by now I've gotten some more information about Scrappers. We'll see. I don't know. Like I said, I played it with a person in Origins, and I don't know if anything will come of that.
But if it does, you will hear about it first here, maybe.
But I feel like the game is done, and if anything else needs to be done to it, it would be with the support and according to the preferences of a publisher.
That'd be pretty awesome.
Is my hope.
Because of the Origin stuff, we haven't talked about our contest recently.
Oh, yeah.
We will report the winner on the next episode. Is that cool? Or should we do a bonus episode to report it?
We should try and do a bonus episode.
Okay, so we will do a bonus episode.
Yeah.
That we'll post. We'll post this week.
Yeah.
We got plenty of time for that, so we'll do that. Steph is supposed to be able to send us back this stuff by tomorrow or the next day, with all the people's names stripped out, so that we can do that.
Okay.
So she was alone with the kids this weekend, so she couldn't.
Yeah, I'm going. I have the cruise control set. It's 5 miles over the speed limit, and there's a police officer following me. And all the people behind me just slowed down.
So guys, if we get pulled over, I think we keep recording.
I think so too.
Not obvious about it.
Documentary podcast, right?
So yeah, but I don't think you're going to get pulled over.
I think I'm probably okay.
I think he's going to pass you.
I think so.
But there's a construction zone coming up here, so I would drop my speed right now if I were you.
Yeah.
Because that is when he might nail you.
Right.
And he's going. No, he's slowing. I'm going to lower the mic because it kind of looks like a weapon. Didn't even look at us.
Yeah, okay, good. Construction zone is serious business. You know, these workers are people too. Okay?
Yes, no. Because seriously, slow down in construction zones.
Especially when there's cops around.
Yeah, even so. Though it's a Sunday and no one is working.
No, but still. The fines still count.
So yeah.
Okay.
So
all right. Was a little cool moment of silence there while we watch the police officer
drive away. He's coming back though up here.
Yeah, we're gonna reemerge. Anyway. Crisis averted.
As much as I'm glad that you didn't get pulled over, I kind of wanted to get pulled over.
That would have made for a good show.
Just so that we could have had an awesome episode of this show. So yeah, so we'll do a bonus episode, release it with a contact information. Like we said before, my wife, Stephanie, who's super awesome, was willing to take all of the names out of the submissions you guys sent us so that we can judge it without knowing who it is. We know the people who submitted, but we did not look at any information on their games, and we let it sit for a couple weeks so that we wouldn't have to remember what anybody submitted. So this will be fresh for us, and our plan is to, we're going to say which game won, and then on the show, reveal to ourselves and you guys who designed that game and who potentially is the third judge for the Iron Design Contest.
Yes.
Speaking of which, the Iron Design Contest, everybody is super pumped for that this year. We got to have some great conversations with some different people who are going to be involved.
Yep.
We still are looking for our head judge.
Yeah, send in your recommendations.
Yeah, if you have a recommendation, by all means, send it out. We are looking for a big name in the board game industry. We'll just leave it at that. A big name in the board game industry. Is that fair to say?
I think so.
So we don't want to put you in a box. You can come up with whatever you want out of that, but... Yes, so that is what we're looking for, and it's going to be exciting. No matter what happens, it's going to be crazy and exciting fun this year, so we're pretty geeked about that.
I mean, that's what we do.
Right, crazy and exciting fun. I mean, when you think building the game, it is synonymous with crazy, exciting fun. So, all right, let's talk about a topic.
Sure.
So today, we're trying to decide what to talk about, and, you know, something that came up a lot this weekend that people—it's a term designers use a lot.
We want to try and define it and understand it.
Yeah, because this term, no one really defines this term, but when you say it, a game designer knows exactly what you mean, and that word is
fiddly.
That's right, fiddly. When somebody says the mechanics are a little fiddly, you know that's not a good thing. You don't want to hear that about your game. But you hear that about... I mean, most designers have heard that about their games.
Yeah, at different times.
Because most of our games, especially early on in the process, there will be some fiddly stuff, right? So let's define fiddly.
So the root of that word, fiddle, right?
Yep.
Not meaning a fiddler, as in... Right. You know, a guy who plays the fiddle. But, like, to fiddle with something is something to, like, to mess with it, you know?
Yep.
Something you have to just kind of, like, constantly keep touching and keep thinking about.
Right.
And adjusting in some way. And so, for me, that is what it means when I say that a game is fiddly. It means there's stuff in there that I have to keep stopping and looking at and thinking about and touching and addressing.
Right. So, I would define it close to that. I would add... A lot of exceptions to the rule, right?
Sure.
To me, that's fiddly because it, you know, and when in, you know, fiddly also could be, I had a good conversation with somebody about rules being too abstract, right? The theme not justifying them in a theme-heavy game. Mm-hmm. I think that defines fiddly in a theme-heavy game as well, right? Where the rules don't fit, like, if the rule doesn't fit with the theme, it makes you have to think about it, have to remember it, right?
Sure.
It's not just like, oh, of course that's what would happen, right?
Sure.
So that, I think, is a good working definition of fiddly.
Yeah.
So, let's talk a little bit more about how we identify that. I think in your games, as a designer, if you're watching a playtester play, and you're especially if you're watching a non-game designer, because if you've got game designers playing your game, most game designers will say to you, this is fiddly, this rule is fiddly, and no one really takes offense to that, because... It's not a bad term, right? I mean, it's an honest term, right?
Sure.
It's easier than saying, well, it's kind of hard to remember this rule, or this rule seems a little out of place, or this rule is fiddly. Of course, if you are a designer and you have a different definition of fiddly, we'd love to hear that.
Of course, please.
We'd like to hear other people's opinions.
Please share.
So when you're watching regular old playtesters play your game, rules they have to repeatedly ask about, rules they need clarification for... Anytime you have to say in your game, when this is happening, like whenever this happens, this always happens, except, or you know what I mean? Whenever you have to say that, that's something you want to think about. Is it fiddly, right?
Sure.
Now, sometimes the answer is yes, sometimes the answer is no. I'll give an example that I don't think is fiddly in one of my games. By the way, you tell me if you think I'm wrong. But,
all right.
So in Minecart Madness, you push each other when you move, right? If somebody's in front of me, I push them. Now, the one exception to that rule is the punch-it thing, which is where you basically it's like strapping a rocket to your minecart, and you go flying above everyone's heads, right?
Yep.
And I don't think that's fiddly because it's a one exception. It's a huge power move. You have a friggin' token you have to discard to do it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it is an attention grabber.
Mm-hmm.
To me, to make that fiddly would say some, like, if the character is in front of you, then you would jump them. But if there's two characters, you'd only jump the first one and not the second one.
Mm-hmm.
And if you were changing lanes, then you would cease to jump. That would be fiddly, right?
Yeah.
So, do you agree that it's not fiddly the way it is?
Yeah, I agree. I think that's fine. It's something, actually, we talked about with Neil this past week, and he and I had a long conversation about rules and rules writing. And
Neil Roberts, by the way, is amazing with rules.
Yes.
Amazing. He is our secret weapon with rules.
Right. And so he is, just to simplify some of his messages, because I am doing that, his feelings about this stuff is far more complex. But so one of the subjects we talked about is, you know, when you're writing rules, make statements, you know? Make short, concise statements. Present one idea, and then present the next idea, and then present the next idea or concept or whatever, you know? Don't string three or four concepts together in one sentence, right?
And also blocking things out into a line, right?
Yeah.
Do this.
Right.
Next line. Do this.
Right.
Rather than a paragraph.
Right. So if there's a piece of your game where the only way you can accomplish, the only way you can explain that is by forcibly, you can't do it in short declarative statements, clear lines. If you have to make this a complex sentence structure in this rules in order to explain all the exceptions and the twists of it, then that's fiddly.
Right.
And it's going to make it harder for a player to understand and keep track of and keep up with.
Unless it is something that you can define very visually and you can just have a picture to explain it.
Sure.
Game setup a lot of times is a good thing, right? Like,
yeah.
I envision Unreal Estate, my game, will have a picture of what the proposal board and the scrap pile look like when they're set up.
Yeah.
Because that is a much easier way to describe it in a short couple sentences and then show a picture to say, in case that was confusing, here's how you do it, right?
Yeah.
But that's not always possible. Sometimes complex things, you can't have a picture to define it because it's just not that simple.
Yeah.
And yeah, in that case, you need to think about the fact that is that fiddly?
Yeah.
What else did he have? Was that the main thing?
That was the main thing I was going to talk about, yeah. So another thing, like, sometimes you just need pieces of your game that would be defined as fiddly. Sometimes you have to deal with that. So you need to try to address that. There are a lot of ways that you can help people make connections with graphic design and with iconography, right?
Yep.
You were just touching on this. So, going back to Phantom of the Opera, right?
Yes.
Phantom of the Opera, you're moving these characters around. Some of the character powers are a little fiddly.
Yes.
Each character has a very special, unique thing. And you probably need to play that game three or four times before you have it memorized, what each player does and how it works and all the little tweaks to those, right?
Yep.
But all the character cards have some kind of a simple icon. If you were looking at that icon without having read the rules, it would make no sense to you. But by having some iconography there, it's a good trigger for you to you can look at that icon, you can think about what the rules say, and it's a good reminder for your brain to make that connection. So it doesn't explain it outright, but it's basically, it's kind of a crib sheet for the rules.
Yes.
In that icon. A lot of icons are best when a simple picture tells you what to do, done, right? You don't even need to read the rules to understand what that says.
Right.
But sometimes that's impossible, so that icon hopefully can be designed in such a way that it can recall enough of the concept so your brain can go back to the rules and its previous experience.
Right.
You know? So, yeah.
So, another thing, look at your rules. How, like, determine how complex your game is, right? Is it a simple 15-minute game? If it is and you've got, like, a 12-page rules document, I guarantee something in there is fiddly.
Yeah.
It has to be, right? Like, yeah. Why is your document, your rules so long?
Yeah.
What else? I was thinking of something else to do with that. So another, like, things to think about is player aids to make things less fiddly, right?
Oh, yeah.
So, in Unreal Estate, I hate to keep talking about my games, but it's just, I mean, like, I'm not afraid to say if something was sure. fiddly and we fixed it. The first player rotates every turn, and we have a thing to mark that. Well, in the game, there'll be something, some sort of token to mark that, right?
Yeah.
If we didn't have that, that would feel fiddly because you'd constantly be... First of all, you'd be like, wait, who's last? Are you last? Wait, did I go first this time? Did you go first? The wrong person is going first. You have to overthink about that process.
Yeah.
Ergo, fiddly.
Right.
So player tokens and things like that can help make things less fiddly. And that goes right in with good iconography. It's just tools to help things not be so hard to understand. You don't want players to have to spend a lot of time thinking about how to play your game. You want them to just be immersed in your game.
You want them to play the game without having to think about it.
Yeah, even if it's just an abstract, that doesn't have a big theme, you still want them to be immersed in the game. I mean, that's the whole point of a game.
Yep.
And fiddly bits take you out of that, for sure.
Sure. Another danger, if you're giving a player a lot of options on a turn, Saloon Tycoon has this, right? You get one action per turn, and there are, what are there, six different actions that they could be?
Right.
Say something like that. So if we didn't have a reference card, then every turn, the players would have to say, okay, let me think through what all my options are again.
Right.
Before they would need to think about it again to identify just what the options are.
Yep.
And then go back a second time to think about which option they actually want to achieve or what they want to try and do. So reference cards to say are great for saying to a player, don't memorize this. Don't worry about memorizing this. It's right here, so you don't have to worry about it.
Know what the options do.
Yeah.
Right. But you don't have to remember what the whole list.
Right.
Minecraft Madness is the exact same way. You've got a player card that tells you everything you can spend energy on.
Yep.
Without that, you would be like, "What can I do in this turn? I don't know what I can do in this turn." Yep. So those are all some really good tips. Mm-hmm. Something else you said was with Phantom of the Opera. This is an interesting. Now, I think they help achieve it by having the good iconography. But you mentioned the first few times you play it, it's going to feel a little fiddly. But after that, it won't. So this brings something else up to me, which isn't necessarily. I don't think this is necessarily defined as the maybe the way we define fiddly is a little bit. But think of a game like Dominion, right?
Yeah.
That's super text heavy on the cards,
sure.
Right? The first few times you play it, you are stopping to read and stopping to ask questions and continually because there's just too much, right?
Yeah.
And because of, so I guess what I'm saying is games where you've got special card powers, there is always the concern that not necessarily that it's fiddly, because that's kind of the point of card powers, right? Is that you can do tons of different things with them, right?
Yeah.
But you do run into the issue of confusing early players. If those things are too much. And I think for a game like that, a great way to do that is to have a starting set. Dominion does a good job of this, right?
Sure does, yeah.
Outlawed is actually another game. The one with Katarsky that we talked about a lot. That game has a starter set of guys you play with because without that, it just makes your head explode on the first play. You need to have kind of a simplified version so you can get it
into the concepts. Yeah.
Then you can read the text heavier guys and get it, right?
Yeah.
That I think is a really good tool to avoid that kind of issue of too much. You know, another game that I think borderlines on that in and really hurts approachability can be, like, Smash Up, right?
Yeah.
Like, I think that's one of the reasons why you don't like Smash Up, is because everything is a variable player power, like, literally everything.
Right.
You have so three dozen variable player powers to remember.
Right, and there's so many different decks and so many different ways they can combine together, and I just don't have the patience to stop and read every card every turn and think about, oh, wait, what are the other cards that are already out there that might have some effect on this? Oh, and wait, each base has its own special things as well. I don't want to keep track of all that.
See, and I thrive on stuff like that.
Yeah.
But if it was a game that wasn't... If Smash Up wasn't done in the way that it was, I would not like it.
Sure.
Because the fact that you just take two decks and smash them together, that helps me with the parts that I don't like, which is trying to build a deck and trying to figure out what the optimal deck is, you know?
Sure.
I just want to pick two things I think are cool and use them together and see how they interact, right?
Yeah.
And that I really, really like. But I can see why people like you who don't want to read tons and tons of cards and memorize tons of cards and understand what things are, that feels fiddly, right?
Yeah.
So I think that's another really good thing to think about.
Sure.
In regards to that.
Sure.
So, to recap some ways to avoid fiddliness in your games, we'll go back and forth here. I think first was not super complex rule statements, right?
Sure.
Keep your rules short and concise.
Yep.
You can have long rules, but you should have short, concise statements. Also, use really good headings for different sections. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Use, like, I know, Rob, you and I do it a lot, pretty much the same way, where, like, you'll have a big heading for, say, gameplay, and then within gameplay, you will have a heading for separate pieces, right? Like,
sure.
A Rambler's is set up this way, where there's the different steps in gameplay. Because there's, like, six steps every round, mm-hmm. all of those steps have their own little section that is subheaded. That way, you're not going, wait, where is this? This is one thing I hate about rules, is when I have to read, like, six paragraphs to find the one sentence I was looking for.
Yeah.
If I have to do that, it's not labeled properly.
Yeah. Yep.
So.
Yeah. We talked about iconography. And, you know, hey, designers, I mean, a prototype is a prototype, and that's a good thing. And sometimes you just need to work on it as just raw text on a page. But at some point, if you really want to get a broader audience of playtesters, make some effort to put some iconography in there, because it's going to make it just that much easier for people to get in and play it and give you good quality feedback. Because then they're going to be thinking about the gameplay and not thinking about how to play.
Right.
So that really can be very beneficial for you.
And a good point for iconography, if you're like, gosh, but I don't have anything for iconography to use, boardgameicons.net has hundreds, if not thousands.
I think it's just gameicons.net, isn't it?
Oh, is it gameicons.net?
Is it game-icons.net?
I think it's game-icons.net.
Yeah.
If you just search game icons, they'll come up.
Yeah.
They're all black and white. They're really, really nicely done.
They're always adding new stuff.
And in Photoshop, they're actually really easy to change the color to any other color in whites, I've found. And if I can do it, you can do it.
Yeah.
And I love that about them. I've used them in numerous games, and they've got tons of different icons. Sometimes you have to stretch a little for what you're looking for, but
yeah, whatever.
Honestly, it doesn't matter as long as the icon is good enough.
Yeah.
But those are all free to use for prototypes. Highly suggest. I think Daniel Solis has a huge thing of icons.
Mm-hmm.
That you can get into with his Patreon or something. I'm not sure.
Something like that.
Or there's, you can buy them somewhere. But
and there's the Noun Project.
Yes, they have lots too.
The Noun Project is a website that's just full of like Creative Commons iconography.
Yep.
To use, and the idea of it is to convert words to pictures.
Yep.
To improve communication, and it's a great resource for games.
Yeah, and it's so use those tools.
Yep.
You know, or sometimes if I'm making a prototype, I just Google stuff and look for, like, clip art that I really like.
Yeah.
And then I will take it into Photoshop and just easily cut out the pieces I want. The first prototype for Unreal Estate, that's what it was. It was, I went and found some cool little art somebody had done for clip art style from, like, a Shutterstock website with a bunch of little houses on it.
Yeah.
And I found ones that all matched. And then I cut them out and I made those. So they looked pleasant together, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it helped people remember what matched to what.
Yeah.
Another good example of the fiddly thing in one of my games was in Unreal Estate. It used to be that multiple different houses could have the same score mm-hmm. on them. So some people would think, oh, I just have to match the score, not the house name. And that people had trouble remembering that. People were confused by that. So, hey, guess what? We changed it. So they're all worth a unique score now. And that's worked smashingly. And it's great because now people aren't confused. So yeah. Yay for not being confused. Yeah. So the other thing I was going to say about rules is if you've got like, if you have a little thing that might be like a one-time exception that you're afraid could feel a little fiddly, I like to, in my rules, in the section where it's applicable, put a big note where it says note, asterisk. And then that thing, because that draws people's eyes, put that in bold. That catches people's attention. So even if they're skimming the rules, like trying to figure something out, when they see that note, you know what I mean? They'll automatically skim that. And hey, guess what? There's the answer I'm looking for. So yeah. So I do find that you don't want to use more than one or two of those in your rules, though, because otherwise it kind of loses its oomph and its purpose.
Sure. Yeah, that's one thing Neil was saying, that whenever he reads a rule book, one of the first things he does is he goes through and looks for anything that's called out saying note.
Right.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's actually something I think I may have learned from Neil with him reading my rules. And I like that a lot. I feel like that really gets your attention.
Yeah.
The other thing, and this is just a general good rules guideline, but it will help with things feeling not fiddly, is from a rules standpoint, is make sure to pick a term for something and use that term for it.
Yeah.
Maybe even capitalize that term if you're serious about it when you use it. With Minecart Madness, I had to keep going through and changing it to pawn, because that's what I wanted to say for a player character. Pawn. I think that's super important, and to stick with something like that.
Yep.
So anyways, yeah, I think that's probably good on the fiddly discussion, unless you have any other
tips. No, I think that's probably good enough. I wanted to actually call back on a different subject, if you don't mind.
Sure.
To somebody I did meet this weekend at Origins. It was a gentleman who had a war game. I think it was, let's say it was like a 1600s era 4X war game.
Okay. And I did not see this game.
Yeah.
I think I saw it from a distance, but...
Yeah, and it was the kind of game that I have no interest in playing, okay? And I'll say that up front.
Right.
He said that he had a group of five, and it played up to seven. So a group of five playing at that time, they were playing the short game, up to a certain number of victory points. And when I talked to him, they were about 3 hours in.
Right.
And he said they were starting to get to the end game.
So another hour or so, probably.
I guess, probably, yeah, I don't know. And that's not a game, that's not for me, right? And we've talked about it before. We like,
right.
We like short stuff. We like a game that plays in an hour. If it's a really good game, I'm happy to play it for 90 minutes. But yeah. I don't want to go over that, you know?
Yeah, 2 hours is probably my absolute maximum. What's hard with that is, like, I like winning. So if I play, like, a four-hour game and just get creamed, guaranteed 2 hours in, I'm not having fun anymore.
Yeah.
And I gotta play for 2 more hours. And that's me, right? That's my flaw.
Sure.
I get that. But, like, I can be honest and open about it and know that that's why I don't want to play it.
Yeah. So I don't want to criticize him for making a long game.
No. There are lots of people there playing 4 and 5 hour games with those big miniatures and stuff, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, that's a thing.
Sure.
And that's good for them.
So I just want to make sure I say that up front. So what I was disappointed to hear him say, though, is he said that this is a game that he started working on when he was in college. He is probably, I would guess he's in his late 40s, based on the gray in his beard. And he said that now that he's been working on it ever since, and now he thinks he's finally ready to do something with it, and to put it up on Kickstarter. And then he said that he had an offer from another publisher, but he didn't like their terms, so he was just going to do it himself.
Which I thought was really... You told me that. I thought that was really interesting. I mean...
Yeah.
Because it was a known... Like, you knew the name of the publisher.
It was a known publisher.
It wasn't like you were like, what is that? You know,
yeah.
Like some startup or something somewhere that no one's heard of.
Right.
I mean, it was legit.
Yeah. I'm a guy who wants to sell to a publisher. You know, that for me, that's my end goal. I don't want to self-publish.
Right.
I feel like, though, for a game of that size, that's a very specific audience for that kind of a game. And you're going to have, in my opinion, is that you're going to have more luck reaching that specific audience that you need if you can connect your game with a publisher who has access to that audience already.
Who already knows that market,
yeah,
and knows how to work that market.
Right. And if you're just going to go in on your own as a Kickstarter, as a first-time designer and publisher, I mean, I understand. And the fact that he's been working on it since he was in college, to most people I would say, dude, time to move on. But the fact that he got it to a publisher and the publisher was interested, hey, right there, that shows he's actually got something good that somebody likes.
Right.
So my criticism of that is unfounded, you know? But it was a surprise to me that he would say he didn't like the term, so he just kept it and is going to do it on his own. I worry about his success, especially understanding the price point that he was also expecting.
Which was higher, right?
Which was very high.
Yeah.
Very high.
That said, for that experience, the people, your target audience, very much might be willing to pay that.
Sure.
And I would guess he would know other games in that niche, or you know, that would really fit with that price point. But we understand a lot of realities about Kickstarter that probably he doesn't.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't want to say he doesn't, but anyways, so I guess. To me, I see it as it's probably a big passion project for him.
Yeah.
Kudos to him for continuing with it. But the tough thing about a passion project is it's hard to let go, right?
Yeah.
I mean, there are very few publishers who, if they wanted a game of mine, that I would say no to. Even if they said, we're going to completely retheme it.
Yeah.
Or unless it was a personal passion project and I had to get it out there and I wanted to get it done. And if that's the case, do it yourself. That's great. But yep. Man, understand the uphill battle you're going to face, on a Kickstarter with a high price point game. Does it include tons of crazy miniatures? Because that would help.
No? Lots and lots of pieces.
That is incredibly hard to do on your own anyways.
Yeah.
It's hard to, I know, speaking from experience, it's hard to do a small game on your own when you're not a publisher via Kickstarter. It's got to be hella lots harder to do that with a huge game that's going to have a high price point.
So I wish him luck.
People have succeeded with that before.
Sure. I wish him luck. I think he's got a steep hill to climb.
Right.
I hope he succeeds. And I respect the commitment, but I don't know. I would not recommend that effort for somebody doing it their first time. I think that's a lot of risk for not a lot of reward.
Right.
So anyway.
Yeah, I would love to have heard what about the terms were not cool enough. Like
yeah,
I would
right.
Because that would kind of set your expectations for understanding what his expectations are with the game and with what he was trying to do with the game and what he was hoping would happen with the game.
Yeah. Anyway, enough of that. You need to pitch a game. It's your turn.
I do need to pitch a game. So, I was talking with some people, and they were talking about games and doing pitch challenges and stuff, and they said on their show they do pitch challenges. I believe it's the Who, What, Why podcast. He said they do some pitch challenges sometimes, and I love pitch challenges. And they had given someone a pitch challenge of an 80s movie. It was that easy. 80s movies was the theme. And I said, well, if I could pitch an 80s movie, and I could have any IP, and I mean this. Actually, I probably don't, because I would probably, if I thought about it longer, I'd think of something better. But if I wanted a challenging IP that wouldn't sell very well, but that would be a good passion project for me, it would be a Breakfast Club game. Because I don't care what you say, The Breakfast Club is a fantastic movie. John Hughes, in his prime, making awesome movies. So I thought, what if I pitched a Breakfast Club game? So I did that for them, and I have obviously not put much thought into it because it was the last night, really late, and now we're recording today. But I did think that it would be fun to kind of talk about that idea and talk about some of my thoughts for it. So I'm going to do that. Have you seen The Breakfast Club, Rob?
Oh, yeah, of course.
Okay, cool.
It's been a while.
I just want to make sure that when I explain stuff, at least to you, it will make sense.
I don't think I know it as well as you do.
Oh, no, I've seen it dozens of times.
Yeah, I've seen it, I think, probably once.
Yeah, so, anyways, I am quite familiar with The Breakfast Club and quite a big fan.
Passion. real passion.
Passion for the Breakfast Club. I want to be in the Breakfast Club. I want to be in detention there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't, though. But yeah. And I didn't even want to be friends with any people in that movie, because most of them are pretty terrible. So, all right. So here's my thought. First of all, it's a role selection game, because why would it not be a role selection game when you have all of the students, right?
Yep.
And I think the best is, instead of having the names of the students, so here's the thing, I could actually make this game, call it like the breakfast group or something, or the brunch club or something.
Yep.
And get away with this by just using the things like the jock, the brain, the basket case, the prom queen. I don't remember actually what they all are off the top of my head. It's been a while. So,
I thought you knew this movie.
I do. It's been a while before since I've seen it, actually. But even though the speech at the end is one of my favorite things. So anyways, the idea is there's these role selection cards, and any player can play any role, right? Now, in addition to the kids' roles, there's also the principal, and there's the janitor, Carl. Carl's one of the best people in the... Yeah, so...
I was going to say Nurse Ratchet, but that's one flew up the cuckoo's nest.
Yeah, there's no Nurse Ratchet in... Yeah, that would be terrible. Why would there be...
I don't know, the school nurse?
It's a Saturday. There's no school nurse.
Dude, go on.
So, okay. So, it is a board game, and the board is the school... Actually, you know what? I don't know if it needs to be a board or if it could be, like, modular stuff. Let's just say it's a board for now because that's easier.
Sure.
So it's a board, the library being the central location, which is where the kids are stuck. There would be some hallways. Connected via those hallways would be places like the gym, because the gymnasium is where some things happen. There would also be the records closet, where the principal spends some time. And also, well, that'd be the basement, I guess. But probably the basement would be too hard, so it would be just a separate place. There would also be the storage closet where Mr. Bender gets put. So that's probably good. Maybe the bathroom. I don't know. But anyways, so all these places, right? So you've got these roles in these places. And on the turn, I'm trying to decide if it would be... I don't think it's role selection as much as on the turn you are given a role, right? That you have to act as.
Okay.
Maybe, like, with the principal, there are some rules you have to follow. And I don't think it's a cooperative game. I think it's a competitive game. I originally envisioned it as a cooperative game, but they really are helping each other, but they're also working against each other. So, because, you know, they're not really friends until the end or whatever. Spoiler alert. So, in the game, you're going to be given secret tasks that you have to complete, right?
Okay.
And then you'll be given a role, and you're trying to complete the tasks with the roles, but not all of the tasks are going to be easy to complete with every role you can have, right? So here's my argument for actually making it cooperative. Since I forgot, this is the idea that I had last night, was it's cooperative, and you guys as a group have to achieve so many goals, and each person has to achieve at least 2 goals, say, right? Yeah. So as a group, you need to achieve, say, 10 goals, but each player needs to achieve at least 2 goals, right? So that way, you can't just have one person who's just knocking the goals out. So you have to help each other make goals, right?
Okay.
But the catch is, you can't tell each other what the goals are. There's a goal that I have to achieve, and then there's a limited piece of information that I'm allowed to give to the other players about said goal, but I can't actually give them that goal. So there would have to be multiple goals with that same piece of limited information so that you couldn't memorize the cards, right? And those goals would mean that I needed to move about the school and do things. Like, maybe it's get soda, get the weed out of the locker. This is a family game, so...
Right.
Get your pencil. That's one of the things that happens. Search the private records of the students, and which is something that the principal does. You know, all of those kinds of things, right? Get another player to do something in the library. So all of those are distract the principal. So these are just things that happen in the movie that can easily be translated into the theme of the game, right?
Okay.
So, as for the actual mechanics of the game, other than that, I'm a little stuck. because I was really focused kind of on the unique idea of the roles, random roles, but you needing to achieve these goals with the other players, but you can only tell them certain information about the goals that you're trying to achieve.
Okay.
And I think that could be really fun. So what are some other... So how do you achieve a goal? I think going somewhere without getting caught... Like, if maybe you have different types of goals, right? Maybe one is a traveling goal, which is like... or a destination goal, we'll call it, right? So yep. A destination goal involves you going to a location in the school without getting caught, right? Maybe going to a location in school and coming back without getting caught, right?
Okay.
So that's like, that's a destination goal. Maybe it's a character goal, right? To where you need to get a certain character, two characters to a location so that one character will divulge a secret or something like that, right? And those could all be things that are tied to the movie, right? Like conversations they have in the movie and that sort of thing, right? Yeah, and I think you can have certain goals that only, like, for instance, the janitor or the principal could achieve, right? So that way, you've got to get that role to make that happen. And maybe there's a way to be able to slightly alter the role you get so that, you know, if you've got two principal ones, you can eventually get the principal, right?
Mm-hmm.
I feel like there's got to be a way to do that. Maybe it's just like a round robin of roles, or maybe you get two roles and you get to pick one. So that increases your chances of, you know what I mean, getting...
So, here's an idea. What if every character has two goals? And your goal as a player is to achieve... how many characters are there?
There's athletes, the delinquent, the basket case, the prom queen... The nerd. There's five of them.
Five kids. Plus the principal
and the janitor. Yeah. So seven characters. Yeah.
So if each one has two unique goals, and that's total 14. So you want to be the first player to accomplish four goals. Okay.
Okay.
So, every character can move or can use a special action.
Right. That makes sense.
Okay. So they're going to have a pawn on the board. So at the start of the round, you're going to have a first player token, okay? So first player is going to choose one of those characters to use in this round, and you go clockwise, okay, for the start of the game.
Uh-huh.
So one of those characters, their special power, and there might be active powers or passive powers, whatever, you know?
Right.
One of those characters is, their only special ability is... The player who chooses them gets to go first in the next round, right? So that's an easy one.
Right.
Okay. One of them might be force another player to trade characters with you.
Okay, yeah.
One of them might be call the principal or call the janitor.
Right. Okay?
With the principal or the janitor, it's, you know, you're depending on their location, if there's another kid in a hallway while the principal's in the hallway, your power is catch the kid and send him back to the library.
Right.
So in order to accomplish any goals, the kids all have to be in one of the external rooms, or it has to be something about getting the adults into the library.
Right.
You know, so one of the goals, have the principal and the janitor in the library at the same time. So it's about arranging these characters and placing them. So if you want to get your pencil, go to the supply closet. And then you've got your pencil, and that you're basically your right. goal card. You pick that up, and so you want to be the first player to get your characters to achieve four goals by the end of the game. And you might have to work together to get the principal and the janitor in. You know, some power might be attract an adult.
So you are saying that you're still saying it's cooperative.
I'm still saying it's competitive. So
okay.
Sometimes you have to work together because maybe two characters. Have a goal that they can achieve. So, if the two people work together, they could, with their characters, they could both achieve one of those characters' goals. But you want to be the first to have four total.
Right. So basically, each character has unique goals. So there's 14 unique goals. Those are sorted up, and then four goals are given to each character. I mean, to each player. So you would have goals from multiple characters, and no one would know what goals you had.
Oh, okay. I was just thinking that they would always be out there corresponding with that character.
No, I kind of like the idea that you don't know. That way you don't know which character I want.
That's a good point, yeah.
So that way when I take a character, you're not like, oh, he's doing this.
Right, and when you achieve it, you just reveal it.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yep. Okay. So that's good. Yeah, that's good.
And maybe you even have 3 goals for each character, and you discard 7 of them, you know? Or you discard 1 from each. That way you can't count or something, you know? Or maybe you have 14 goals plus 4 generic goals that anybody can accomplish.
Right. Or you could have 3 for each character, but then just deal 4 to each character and then have a deck to where you could possibly discard one and draw a new one.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That way you always had more options. That way you weren't ever stuck with, crap, I can't do this.
Yeah. I think I think that's a simpler approach.
Yeah. I like that. I wonder if I get this IP.
Right.
And then have it fail on Kickstarter because no one cares about the Breakfast Club like I do.
The brunch group.
The brunch bunch.
The brunch bunch. Sure. Or you just call it detention.
That is true. Yeah. Oh gosh, yeah, that's true.
Just call it detention. People will get it.
Yep. Call it detention. And then the roles, of course, can be those roles from the movie.
Generic archetypes, right, yeah.
So, that would be great. Oh, that would be great. Cool. So, I'm going to say that I'm going to look into this more. I'm probably not, but I'm going to say that I'm going to, because right now I really want to, but I don't know that I will.
Well, if you're not going to use it, then I might use it for the idiot's buy.
Well, I want to try and use it first.
All right.
If I don't use it, then you're welcome to steal it back.
But, okay.
So, cool. Yeah, I think that that could. Yeah, I think it's worth trying.
Sure.
Cool. Seriously, though, I wonder if a company could get that IP for me. That'd be great.
I don't know.
I mean, again, I think it'd just fail on Kickstarter because who wants a Breakfast Club game? Just this guy.
Just you.
So you know what? My wife would be really excited.
Never underestimate the power of nostalgia.
That is true.
Especially 80s nostalgia.
You know who else would buy it? Every person from Flip the Table would back that.
Yeah, right. cool. I don't think we're going to mess with any Twitter questions or voicemails or anything, because last time we did that with the voicemails, it didn't go well.
Yes, so funny coincidence, Isaac's voicemail was the one that we played last time, and it got hosed. And Isaac actually has another voicemail with us right now. It is very good.
Okay.
And it's about something we talked about, and it's very good. And I want to play it next week when we can play it correctly because it sounds so great.
Cool.
And he's got some really good points about some stuff we talked about a while back now, about a month or so ago.
Okay.
But it was great. So thank you for that, Isaac. Look forward to that next time.
Yep.
But I think we're good other than that.
Okay, so thanks everybody for listening. If you want to get in touch with us, you can send us an email to buildingthegamepodcast@gmail.com or go to our website, buildingthegamepodcast.com. You can follow us on Twitter @podcastBTG. Jason is @JASlingerlin. I'm @poorly_design. Give us the likes. Give us the reviews on the podcast places. Call our Google voice number at 770-TEL-BTG. And we'll be back again next week. Oh, and again, look for a bonus episode later this week where we will announce the winner of the football challenge and the judge. The winner of the prize is the judge, to be a judge at the Iron Design Challenge.
Yes.
I'm going to say judge a few more times. Judge. That's enough. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Good night.
Building the Game is a co-production of Imminent Entertainment and Poorly Designed Studios. All of the ideas presented by Rob and Jason are property of the Building the Game podcast. Next time on Building the Game.
Yay!
Yay!
Recorded an episode!
We sure did.
Woo!